Now we're holding on set Gimel Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday about the concept that, which we've already discussed before, in the 7th parak, that a gazlan or a ganav can be koina, whatever it is that he stole, with when the shinri teyek. Back in the 7th parak, we talked about this concept. We were also talking about it in connection with yush. Here we're focusing at the beginning of our parak about about in general the shinui itself. What kind of shinui is necessary in order for him to be koine? We talked about there's a shinui doraisa, meaning something around a doraisa level already is considered to have been changed. That would be a shinui shein chozol abriyosa, an irrevocable change. You're never going to be able to get it back to the way it was originally. Versus you have a shinui dirabanon, which is something where there is a change to it. It would be possible to reverse that change. Nevertheless, the Chachamim, as we're going to discuss later in the Gemara, mipnei takonas hashavin, to make it easier for people to do tshuva, then the Chachamim said that even in such cases, certain kinds of shinuyim are considered a shinui, and therefore the ganav acquires it, and he only has to pay back the value of it rather than the object itself. So the last thing we talked about was that according to Reb Shimon ben Yehuda had said in the name of Reb Shimon that even dyeing wool is not necessarily considered a shinui she'eino chozol l'briyasa, because the Gemara had established most kinds of dyes can actually be removed using sapon, which is the same word basically as the word soap in English. So it means some kind of warm soap or detergent where even after the wool has been dyed, you can still undye it by applying this saffron, this detergent, to it. So therefore, he considers it not to be a shinui that would make a difference in terms of the kinyan of the object. So now the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, Ubeis Shammai, V'Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, V'Rav Shimon ben Elazar, V'Rav Yishmael, Kulus, V'Rav, all these Tanoim hold shinui b'mekoymei omed, that even after there's a shinui to something, it still remains as it is. Meaning, in other words, so right now, actually the business about saffron, actually that was Rava had said that in the previous piece. Abaya had said that Reb Shimon ben Yehuda would understand Reb Shimon to be saying that a shinui, that certain kinds of shinuyim at least, are not considered a shinui, even though whether they're chozol or briyosa or whether they're not, and nevertheless, we would still say that it's still considered the original thing. He doesn't make the distinction between different kinds of dyes, so he would say, for example, that when the wool was dyed, regardless, it's not considered a shinui and is, and it still belongs to the original owner, not to the ganav. So now Rabbi is saying, in keeping with that we have a whole bunch of tanoim who say similar things. Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, and we have a general rule, as we've learned before, that such a thing is called a shita. And we have the rule, ein halacha kashita, when you have a list of tanoim like that who all hold the same way, it means the halacha is not like them. Even among themselves, they don't necessarily all agree on each other's dinim. Tosfos points out over here, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, in the previous piece, had said that dyeing wool is not enough to be considered a shinui, but he agrees that, for example, spinning it or weaving it or whatever is enough to be considered a shinui. So even he does hold that certain kinds of shinuyim are considered a shinui. So it's not that he holds that no shinui is a shinui as far as the ganav of acquiring it. He only says a certain kind, but we see, in other words, that he holds, similar to the other tanoim, that there are cases where shinui, where something that normally we would consider to be a shinui, it does not work for that purpose, and therefore that justifies Abaya putting him in this list. So, many times like that, Tosfos points out, where the Gemara will bring a whole shita like that, a whole line of Amirot, a whole line of tanoim, who say a certain way, they don't actually necessarily agree with each other, but they both hold the same underlying idea, and from it they derive different din. So, Reb Shimon ben Yehuda hadamar, and Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, we said, he holds that even after the shinui to the wool, it still belongs to the original owner. Specifically, actually, the din he had said in connection with was actually in connection with Reishis Hageiz, that even after the wool has died, it still would have to be given to the Kohen as part of the Reishis Hageiz. Unlike the Chachamim would say that once it's died, then it's not considered part of that wool anymore. Next. Beis Shammai Maihi, where do we see Beis Shammai holds of such a thing? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, we've learned this earlier in the Masechta. Now we know the Torah tells us that you can't bring Esnan Zoyna as a korban, or something that was used as payment for a Zoyna for her services. So Braisa says, Nosan lachitim be'esnana. What if he gave her wood? What if he gave her wheat as her esnan? Vasa'on, vasa'on, or vasa'atan, really, it's supposed to be. And she made it into flour. Zaysim vasa'on shemen. Or he gave her olives and she turned them into oil. And novim vasa'on yayin. Or he gave her grapes and she turned them into wine. So can that flour or oil or wine be used for korbanos? Tony had osur, but Tony idach mutter. One braisa says it's osur to use them as korbanos, and the other one says it's mutter. So why are the two braisas disagreeing? But Omer Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef says Tony Guryan de me aspurak. Guryan from aspurak is the name of a place. He said that the two braisas reflect two different opinions of Tanoim, Bishamai Osirin or Bishil Maturin, where Bishamai says it's also to use these for Korbanos, and Bishil says it would be Mutter. So my time into Bishamai, now why does Bishamai say that it is, why does Bishamai say that it's Osir? Because they say Omakro Gam Shnehem, because the Pasuk says that, the Pasuk, when it mentions this concept, it says, you can't bring Esnan Zona, also not Mechir Kelev, which means something that was used in exchange for a dog. So say, for example, I have a sheep, you have a dog, and we trade one for the other, then that sheep becomes also to be used for, a korban. And the Pasuk says, Gam Shnehem, also both of them. So the Shammai learns from that. L'rabas Shinu Yehem, that comes to include also any altered forms of them. So not only the original wheat, but also, the altered form where it was turned into flour. So we see, in other words, that the Shammai is saying that even though there was a major change to it, nevertheless, it's not enough to change the status of it in halacha, and therefore the Gemara is understanding that the same thing is true as far as a ganav, that the same thing, the fact that it changed, does not mean that now the ganav owns it. He doesn't own it, and therefore he would have to return the actual item itself. You have different achronim talk about the exact parameters in that. I mean, of course, a shinui to something doesn't generally take away the issue of it. We don't say, for example, if you have, let's say, nevela, and then we make a shinui to it, that then it doesn't become nevela anymore. So the Chazon Ish talks about the idea. In other words, you have to consider, after all, wheat and grapes and whatnot can't be used as a korban as they are. They have to be transformed. And nevertheless, so therefore, Bishamai would take the view that it's still considered that the original issue was on the flour that was going to be made from this wheat. And therefore, we see that even though it's a shinui, she'ena chozer l'briyasei, nevertheless, it still was osur and remains osur, and Bishil is going to disagree. And then you have different, a different point that's made, the difference is that when it comes to Rav David Pavarsky points out that, when you have like this, when you have the Isser, you have something is Osir in its Etzem Metzius. Nevela, for example, intrinsically is Osir. Here it's not so much Esnan Zona is not Osir intrinsically. It was used for a wrong purpose, therefore you can't bring it as a korban. So therefore we can be talking about whether a change here is enough to take away the Isser, and Beis Shammai holds that not, and therefore by analogy, they would say that a change is not enough for the Gazlan to be koinet. Then there's a point from the Sefer Yireim Arishon who says that the vote would be, we're talking about, let's say he gave her the wheat before the bia with the intention she's going to be koinet only at the time of the bia, and now what happens if he turns into flour before that? So then you have the question, is that considered the actual esnan or not? And Acharonim discussed that in detail. Anyway, the point is that Bishamai is saying that the change to it does not change the status of it in terms of that still esnan. Or Bishil answers to that. Well, how can you say it includes the altered forms? Omakro heim v'lo shinu yehem. The pasuk says gam shnehem. So the hem of shnehem means them themselves. So only them themselves are also not the shinuyim of it. So the question is Bishamai hoksiv heim. So how does Bishamai understand that hem? And the answer is, Hahumi Boile Heim Veloi Vlodis Sehem. Bishamai says that means that only they are also not their Vlodis. So a person were to give a cow to a Zoyna for her Esnan, and afterward that cow has a baby, then that baby wouldn't be also as a Korban. That we would learn from the Hem of Shnehem, says Bishamai, but not that if it itself was actually altered, that, for example, wheat turned into flour, that it shouldn't be also. Bishamai says no. Ubis Hillel, what does Ubis Hillel answer to that? They say, Taut is Shamas Mina. The fact is, they say that you could learn, you could, So Ubis Hillel, Taut is Shamas Mina. So Ubis Hillel says, that's true, that if the Vlodis are not included. From that very word hem, you can learn both things, that a shinui is mutter, and also that the you can learn hem below shinuyim, hem below vlodisayim. Both the shinuyim and the vlodis remain mutter, because that's what the pasuk is saying. Only them themselves, not if they were altered into something else, and not if they were, and not if they had babies. Well, the question is, Ubis Hillel Hanami Hoksiv Gam. Now, this Shammai had learned from the word Gam Shnehem that it means also the Shinuyim. What is Ubis Hillel doing with the word Gam? And the Gemara says, you're right, Gam Ubis Hillel Kasha. You're right, according to Ubis Hillel, the word Gam would be a Kasha. Why, according to Ubis Hillel, does it say the word Gam in the Pasuk? It's true, it's hard to find a good explanation, according to Ubis Hillel, of why it says in the word, of why it says the word Gam. Okay, as usual, you know, kasha is not a tiyuta, so it means we haven't schlugged up Ubis Hillel, but they would have something to explain. Why indeed it says gam in the pasuk. Anyway, the point is, we see that Ubis Shammai holds similar to Rav Shimon ben Yehuda that a change in something does not change the status of it in terms of him or her being koyin. Next, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Maihi. Where do we see Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says such a concept? Who was also in Abaye's list. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Hareshu Gozal Saw Shochitin. Imagine a person stole a saw of wheat, Tochna, then he ground it up, Losha, and he kneaded it to make dough, Va'afa, and he baked it, Ve'hifrush Mimena Chala, and he separated Chala from it. Now, strictly speaking, Tosfos points out he should have separated challah from it beforehand. Once he mixes the dough, once he kneads the dough, he's already chayiv in challah. So Tosfos points out the point is, even though the Elazar ben Yaakov wants to tell you, even though he did so many shinuyim to it, nevertheless, it's still considered the original object. Or Tosfos points out sometimes, so here and also elsewhere, Tosfos points out sometimes, in fact, there are cases where you tackle only become chayiv and challah when you baked it. Namely, for example, you made like a batter. You made more like a battery type of dough rather than a soft dough like you would make for cakes or cookies or whatever. And then you decided to bake it. Then it becomes chayiv and challah only when you bake it, because otherwise the assumption would have been that you're going to make it into something like pancakes or something, which are potter from challah. Anyway, the point is, so here he did all those things, v'hifrish mimena challah, and he took challah from it. Ketzad mevarech. How can he make a bracha on it? Ein zeh mevarech ela menoyz. This is not blessing Hashem. This is blaspheming and insulting Hashem by making a bracha on that. Val zeh nemar, on this the pasuk says, Beitzeah beirech mietz Hashem. The Beitzeah, which Rashi explains, is a word that means a thief. Beirach, when he makes a bracha, mietz Hashem, he's blaspheming and insulting Hashem. So we see, in other words, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov holds, even though the wheat has gone through all of these changes, including that now it's gone from wheat all the way to bread, major, major changes, nevertheless, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov considers that it's still the same object that he stole, and therefore that they shouldn't make a bracha on it. What kind of bracha are we talking about? So one way of understanding is, in fact, that we're talking about one possibility is we're talking about the bracha of taking challah, the bracha lahafush challah. First of all, Marsha points out the context, that pasuk of Itzeh Derech, Nietz Hashem, the continuation of the psukim over there is talking about a thief, because actually the earlier psukim, the Gavas Rosha Yidlak Oni in capital Yod of Tilim, the Rosha is so proud of himself and so certain of himself, he goes and chases after the poor and steals from them, and then continues, Beitzeh Derech Nietz Hashem, so we understand that we're talking about a Gazlan over here. But the point is, Marsha also explains the word Beitzeah over here can also be understood as to separate, not besides what Rashi is saying, that it means a thief. It can also mean to separate. So it means when he's separating challah, he shouldn't make the bracha on, he should make a bracha, lahafish challah, because how can he make a bracha on such a thing? Now, with that said, though, a number of Rishonim and Achronim explain that we're actually talking about the bracha, hamotzi, on it. Marsha mentions that point. The Rambam holds that way, that you can't make hamotzi on such food, On the other hand, the Raiva disagrees with that and says, you have your own expression that the Gemara says in some places, Misha ochal shum v'reichei noidif, yachsav yachal shum v'yehei reichei noidif. If a person is eating garlic and his breath smells bad, do we tell him eat more garlic so your breath should smell worse? In other words, just because the person did an Avera and stole, should we tell him on top of that, do another Avera and eat without a bracha? So you have a machlokas rishonim on that point. Is it that he can't make a birkas on mitzvahs on it? Well, but he could make a birkas on nanan on it. For example, hamotzi, the Raivad holds that way. The Rambam says that no, he shouldn't make hamotzi on it either. So the Alter Rebbe brings these different opinions and says, well, inyan halacha, it'll really depend whether we ate it b'shoigig or b'mezid. And then there's really the distinction about also, now here we're saying that even though it was transformed from wheat into flour and then into dough and then into bread, then the same din would apply. That actually would be different. Since we're saying ein halacha kashita, the fact is, the halacha is that a shinui is koinet for the gazlan. So therefore, again, when it came to a birkas on mitzvahs, he wouldn't make a bracha on it because it is a mitzvah, bar ba'avera. But on the other hand, birkas on nanin, he would say. So if he had actually stolen wheat or whatever, then the actual final halacha would be maybe that he should make a bracha on it. Actually, the Alter Rebbe ends up saying suffik brachas lahakol. But if he stole the bread itself, then it'll depend. Then it'll depend whether it was b'shoigig or b'mezid. Because after all, then there's no shinui, and then he'd owe them the actual bread himself. So therefore, that would be, as the Gemara is saying over here, in some of our chelamanards. So the bottom line is there's a number of different dinim that are relevant in this connection, and it'll depend on the exact circumstances. Anyway, the point is though that we're saying, Rabbi is saying, you see that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov holds that even though there was a shinui to it, he still wasn't koineh. Next, Rav Shimon ben Elazar Maihi, where we see Rav Shimon ben Elazar says such a concept. D'tanya, Kablalze Omer Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Rav Shimon ben Elazar said a general rule, Kol Shvach Shish Biach Gazlan, any improvement to the stolen item that the Gazlan made, Yodai Al HaYona, that afterwards, when he's coming to return the thing, he has the upper hand. If he wants to get from the original owner an amount equal to the shvach, then he can do that. So say, for example, he stole an animal that was worth $100. He fattened it up and whatever, and now it's worth $120. So he would be entitled, when he's returning the animal, to say to the nigzel, look, now you have an animal back that's worth $120. I put money into it, therefore reimburse me the $20. So he could do that. And if he wants, he can say, meaning take it as it is. But the Gemara says, before we understand what Rav Shimon ben Elazar is saying, we have to figure out, my ka'omar, before we figure out how this is relevant to the dinim of Shinui to Gzela, we have to figure out, first, what does he mean? Harei shalacha fanecha is an expression that you use when the thing has deteriorated. As we'll have examples throughout our parish, where you're saying, okay, it went bad, it deteriorated, it got ruined or whatever, not my problem, harei shalacha fanecha. You don't say that when it improved, as in the case here, where it went up in value. So what does Rav Shimon ben Elazar mean with harei shalacha fanecha? Rav Shesha says, Rav Shesha says, Rav Shimon ben Elazar means like this, hishbicha noitel shvachai, if the gazlan improved the gzela, then he gets his shvach, he gets reimbursed, kochash, and if it weakened, if it went down in value, then still he can tell the owner, you take it as is, and there we see that he holds that shinui b'mekayim oimed, even though there was a shinui to it, and the Gemara is assuming at this point that the kochash is an irrevocable change, nevertheless it still doesn't belong to him, it still belongs to the original owner, and therefore he can't say, therefore he has the ability to say, harei shalacha fanecha, same as any other case of gzela, where the thing itself still exists. Well, the Gemara asks, Yehochi afilu yishbiach nami. Well, then the same logic should apply even if he was mashbiach it. Why in that case are we saying that he collects the shvach, implying that he returns the original animal? Amri. So they said, in fact, you're right. Minatora, he wouldn't acquire it because, again, the whole thing belongs to the original owner. Here, the gazlan himself is not acquiring it with the shinui. But the Chachamim said that he shouldn't have to, that he should be able to get back the shvach in order to make it easier for him to do tshuva, as we're going to discuss more about that point on Amud Beis. So therefore, So therefore, so in that case, when there's shvach, then we allow him to collect it so that he, in order to make it easier for him to do tshuva. But fundamentally, the animal as it is belongs to the original owner, and therefore we see that he holds that shinui b'mkayme oimid, that even though there was a shinui, it still retains its original status. There is a machlokas within that, a machlokas we're showing him. What about if the shvach came on its own? What about if the animal itself fattened up or otherwise increased in value? Would Takonis Ashavim apply to that as well? The Ravid holds no, the Rashba holds yes. Next. Rabbi Shmuel, where does Rabbi Shmuel say such a thing? Of Shinu Bim Kaimi Omer, he was the last one on a buyer's list. Maihi, where do we see that he said that? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, mitzvahs peya lahafush minakama. The fundamental mitzvah of peya is to separate it while the grain is still standing, before you've harvested it. You leave aside a corner, an edge of your field for the poor people, and you don't harvest it at all. Loi hifush minakama. What if the person did not designate peya while it was still standing? Mafush minakomrim. Then he should separate from the bundles of grain after it was harvested. Loi hifush minakomrim. Mafush minakri. And if he still didn't do it from the bundles of grain, then he should do it from the pile of grain. That would apply until he does meruach, because up till that point, it's not yet chayev and maisa. Once he did meruach, ma'aser v'noisim loy, he would first have to take maaser and only then give it to the poor people, because at this point already it became chayev and maaser, so therefore we don't want the poor person to lose out, therefore he has to take maaser from it first. Now, why are we not mentioning truma? Tosfos says, the fact is, truma is a very easy thing. Midaraisa, after all, you only need one grain of wheat as truma. So therefore, the braisa is not mentioning, the braisa, mishnah actually, whatever, is not mentioning this concept. Because it's so easy to take off truma. On the other hand, the Rashba says, look, a lot of times we use the word ma'aser and it includes truma as well. Obviously, you have to take truma because you have actually in this week's parasha, you have a mitzvah, maleach habadimacha, loy sa'acher, which means you're not allowed to give trumas and ma'asers out of order. You're supposed to give truma first, then ma'aser rishon, and then ma'aser sheni, and so on. Okay. Anyway, the point is, so thus far, there hasn't been much of a shinu to it. But Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Omru Af Mafresh Mina Issa V'Noisim Loi, they said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that you even if he hadn't given paya all that time, he already ground up the wheat and made flour, and he already made the flour into dough. Rabbi Shmuel would say he still has to give paya if he hasn't all that time. Whereas the Tanakama would say once he got to that point already, then it's a shinui. It's mamon she'en lo tovim. You can't say any poor person who comes and says you should give it to me. He can say, well, look, it's not specifically yours. If it belongs to any oni, and I could choose to give it to a different oni. So therefore, the Tanakama would say that at that point he's potter from paya. He's done an aveira. He was over on the mitzvah of not leaving paya. But nevertheless, he doesn't have to give it to them, whereas Rabbi Shmuel would say that he still does. So we see Rabbi Shmuel holds that even though there was an irrevocable shinui, nevertheless, he still can't keep it. He has to give it to the poor people. So there we have the list of Tanoim who hold of that concept. By the way, Rashi points out, according to the Tanakhama, we wouldn't say the threshing of it is considered a shinui, because after all, you have, before the threshing, you had the wheat kernels there. Now you also have the wheat kernels. The only difference is, before they were inside those shells, and now they're not, but that's not enough of a shinui for the Tanakhama to consider that a shinui. Once he ground it and made it into flour, that would be, and then kneaded it, that the Tanakhama would consider a shinui, and Rabbi Shmuel again is saying, doesn't matter whether it was a shinui or not, either way, it still belongs to the poor people. However, Amalei Rav Papa Abaya, so Rav Papa asks Abaya, so what are you telling me? You have Beis Shammai and four other Tanoim who hold that Shinui B'Mekoyim Oymed. Now, of course, when you have a Machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, the Halacha is going to be like Beis Hillel. So the question is, Ichbal Kohani Tanoi Lashminin to Beis Shammai, have all of these Tanoim gathered together and worked hard and then each one given their opinion only to tell us that they hold like the Shammai? Don't they know that Halacha is like the Hillel? What's the point? Amalei, so Rabbi says, Hachi Ka'amri, all of these Tanoim are saying, Loi Nechlaku B'Shama B'Silol, but Davazeh, they're saying B'Shama B'Silol never argued about this point. Many times we have in the Gemara, we'll have a Machlokas B'Shama B'Silol, but then there'll be a certain Manda Omar, there'll be a certain Tana who says that actually no, B'Shama B'Silol never argued on this, they both agreed the Halacha is such and such. So these four Tanoim, Rav Shimon Yehuda, and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and so forth, they all hold that this Shama and this Hillel both agree in the case of Esnan that a shinui does not in fact change it, and in fact that the wheat that was ground up into flour, etc., would be also to bring as korbanos. Unlike what we said before, that Guri and Damascus Bura had said that Bishama would say it's also, and Bishulul says it's mutter, these other four Tanoim that Abaya had listed, says Abaya, they would disagree and say that no, Bishama and Bishulul hold the same on it, that it is in fact also. However, Omar Rava, Mimai, but Rava says, how do you know that in fact you can say that all these Tanoim in fact hold like Bishama? In fact, maybe not. Dilma ad kama ka'omer Rav Shimon Yehuda hasim elabat seva. You know when Rav Shimon Yehuda is saying, as far as the wool that was dyed, and saying that nevertheless it still has the chiyuv of reishis hadgeiz on it, as we learned yesterday, you could say, he says only when it comes to dyeing, hayov yachol avira aydet sapon, because most kinds of dyes can be removed by applying sapon, by applying the soap or detergent or whatever to it, which takes away which removes the dye, and therefore brings the wool back to the state it was before. Even Rav Shimon Yehuda, though, is not necessarily holding when it comes to an irrevocable change. We had yesterday, for example, Rava had pointed out, you have kola ilon, you have one particular dye that they had at that time that was known to be very color fast, and even saffron wouldn't remove it. So therefore, Rav Shimon Yehuda would agree that that kind of change is in fact koina. And as Tosfos had pointed out, even Rav Shimon Yehuda holds there were other kinds of shinuyim, such as spinning it or weaving it or whatever, that are also considered a shinui sheni chozer. So therefore, Rava says not necessarily is it that Rav Shimon Yehuda holds that there's some kind of shinui she'ini chozer, which is not koina. He would hold every kind of shinui she'ini chozer is koina, but he would point out that most kinds of dyes are a shinui ha'chozer. So therefore, you can't have them in your list, says Rava. But ad kam l'kamim b'shama hosim elu l'gavoya. You know when b'shama is saying in the case of Esnan that even though it was altered, you can't use it. Fine, because that's elu l'gavoya, only when it's used as a korban for Hashem, mishum de'imis, because it became disgusting, the fact that it was used as Esnan zona, is enough of a reason to answer it even after it was changed. They wouldn't necessarily say in other areas of halacha that a change doesn't make a difference in the status. The ad kam l'kamer Rav Elazar ben Yaakov hasim elul inyan bracha, and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is only talking about in terms of the bracha. Because you have the problem of mitzvah abba aveira, as we said before, that the fact is you're making a birkas mitzvah, so according to somebody showing him a birkas ananin on something which came to you through an isur, through an aveira, and therefore that would be a special reason over there to not allow it, but that doesn't necessarily show that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would hold that concept in other areas of halacha. And in fact, as we said before, the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov as far as this, subject to that machlokas we've shown him of the exact parameters of when we say it's a mitzvah baba veda and when not. The ad kan lekomer Rav Shimon Elazar hosim ela b'chosher dehoder. Rav Shimon Elazar's case, where he's talking about where the animal deteriorated in value, and the gazlan has the right to say harei shalach l'fanecha. Ella b'chosher dehoder. Maybe he's only talking about a deterioration that will go back to the way it was. So it's not a shinui she'ini chozer. It's a shinui achozer. Temporarily, the animal is weaker and then skinnier. Eventually, it's going to fatten up and go back to being strong and healthy again. So then, that's a shinui she'ini chozer. Even the chachamim would agree that that's not necessarily kona for the gazlan, except maybe because of a special takonas hashavim. But that doesn't show that he holds that shinui she'ini chozer is not considered a shinui. And the last one, Bad Kamla, Kamar Rabbi Shmuel Hossam, Elin in Peah. You know when Rabbi Shmuel is saying that he's still chayav when it comes to Peah, even after he made it into dough, is specifically by Peah, Mishum Dichtiv, Taz of Yisera. Because by Peah, the Pasuk says, an extra time, the word Tazoy, you should leave it, So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel learns from that that it means you always have a responsibility to leave it even after the fact, even though you already harvested it and ground it and kneaded it and so on. And the Gemara says, "B'chitema ligma minei." Now you're going to think, okay, well, let's learn a binyan av from that. Once the Torah says tazov by peah, and it means that even though you made it into bread, you still have to give peah from it. Maybe you learn from that a binyan av to the rest of the Torah. No, you wouldn't do that. Matnas aniyim shiny, because matnas aniyim, such as peah, are different. As we know, kideboy Rav Yonason, as Rav Yonason, in fact, asks the question, the Deboi Rav Yonason, my time is Rabbi Shmuel. Why indeed does Rabbi Shmuel say that you'd have to leave peah, that you'd have to give peah out of the dough? Mishum de kasava shinu ena kona. Is it in fact like Abaya said, because he always holds that shinu is not kona? Meaning, in other words, he would say in the case of a ganav that he does not acquire the actual object and he always has to return it be'ain to the owner. Is it that? Ojoma ba'alma kasava shinui kona? Or is it that in general Rabbi Shmuel holds that a shinui is kona? The hocha, mishum dechtiv tazev yisera, and here only because it says especially tazev would be saved different. And he continues, so we could say, in other words, we see that Rabbi Yonason is not sure on what basis Rabbi Shmuel is saying his did. Well, very well then, we could say that he's saying it only because, that he, maybe he kaka does hold shinui enekona, but maybe it's only because you have, specially it says over here, tazo, and therefore the Torah would be implying that there's something special about matnas aniyim that does not apply to other mitzvahs. And he continues, "V'im timtza loymar." If you're going to say "Taimed Rabbi Shmuel mishum de kasava shinu enekoina," if you're going to say the first possibility that in fact Rabbi Shmuel holds in general shinu is not koina, then you'd have to ask "Tazav yisera de kasav rachmana lamali." Then why does the Torah write the extra tazavs? The two, and further, we would have to ask "L'rabbanon tazav yisera de kasav rachmana lamali." And according to the Chachamim, who they don't hold of this concept at all, they hold, as we said, that once you get past the stage of once you get to the stage of grinding the flour, then already it's a shinui she'ene chozer, and therefore you're potter from giving peah at that point. At that point, you've been over on the mitzvah of giving peah, but at this point, there's no recourse. You don't have to give peah anymore. So what are they doing with the word tazov? And according to Rabbi Shmuel, if we say that he's saying that in general shinui she'ene chozer is not considered a shinui, then what is he doing with the word tazov? And the answer is mibo lo l'chidatanya. Rabbi Shmuel would use that to teach us a din that it says in the following braisa, Hamafkir Karmoi, if a person declared his vineyard hefker, the Hishkim Laboiker, and then he woke up first thing in the morning and he took it back from Hefker Ubatsroi and he harvested it. You have a machloikas Rishonim within that. Does it mean that he was only Zoicha back in the Karka, or also if he was Zoicha only in the Paris, is the following din are going to apply? And you have also a machlokas, whether, what about if somebody else was zoicha in it, would he be chayev in the various matnas aniyim? Anyway, the point is, the braisa is saying that if he himself takes it back, chayev the peret, he's so chayev in peret, which is when you're harvesting grapes and one or two grapes fall down and you have to leave them for the poor people, over ovalos, and he's going to be chayev in ovalos, which are the undeveloped small clusters of grapes that don't have the normal shape of a cluster, where you have to leave those for the poor people as well, over shitka, and shitka if he forgets any grapes behind, over peah, as well as peah. Because all of those, Rashi points out, even though all of those usually are potter from hefker, but each one of them, the Torah says an extra word, tazov, which tells you, therefore, that you're chayev in them, even if they were hefker at one point, as long as they're not hefker now when you're harvesting them. So again, if Rabbi Shmuel holds that in general, shinui sheine chozer is not considered a shinui, then he would use the word tazov to teach us this din. The Chachamim, who hold anyway that shinui achozer lebriyasa is a shinui, they would also use tazov to learn this din. Only if Rabbi Shmuel is saying that we're learning specifically from the word tazov, then we would say that's fine. Each time it says tazov, then we're saying that you have to leave it even after you turned it into dough, or even after you made it hefker, or whatever. But Anyway, so that's what we learned from the word kazer and opater, opater. And I'm meiser, however, it is potter from meiser because it was hefker at one point. And by meiser, it doesn't say by meiser rishon and meiser sheni and truma for that matter. It doesn't say kazer. So therefore, once it was hefker at one point, then it remains potter. So that's what we learned from the word kazer. So again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, we might say that according to him, from one of those tazos, we also learn that when it comes to peah, you also have to give it even after it was turned into dough. And the other possibility is that he and the Chachamim would all say that, no, we don't say that. We would say in the case of Rabbi Shmuel would say that shinui achoz lebriyasei is never considered a shinui. The Chachamim would say that it is. And as far as the tazos, they'd use it all for this din about what happens if you made it hefker and then took it back from hefker. Okay. So the bottom line is that Rava is saying, to Rabbiya, every one of these five Tanoim that you brought, where you're saying, they're saying Shinui Achoz Lebriyasei is not considered a Shinui, out of all of them, four of them, we have no particular reason to say that they would say that din across the board, only Rabbi Shmuel maybe would say that. Now, one of the five Tanoim that we mentioned before was Rav Shimon ben Elazar, and we had the case where he said where if the animal went up in value, then again we said that he can say to the nigzo, you have to reimburse me for that increase in value. And then you have subject to the machlokas we showed him what happens if it increased in value on its own, but whatever. And then we also had that if the animal deteriorated in value, then he can say harei shalach l'fanach. That he can say, you take it as it is, I'm not chayav to reimburse you for that change in value because it was considered, because Rav Shimon Elazar had said, so according to Abaye, it was because Rav Shimon Elazar had said that you never say that a shinui makes a difference. According to Rava, the vote was usually a shinui makes a difference, but here we're talking about it's something reversible. Right now, the animal has been weakened, but it can be strengthened up again. So the Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha could have Shimon Elazar. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, that there's cases where he's able to say, Harei Shalach Lefanech. But the Gemara says, Mi Amar Shmuel, achi, did Shmuel in fact say such a thing? Well, Amar Shmuel, we learned all the way back in the first parak of Amar Sechda that Shmuel had said, Ein Shomin Loyla Ganav, Loyla Gazlan, Elon Zakin. In the first parak, we had the case where my shur kills your shur, and he said the nevela essentially belongs to you, the owner of the shur to begin with. So therefore, so now we calculate how much is the dead shur worth versus how much was it worth when you were alive, and I have to reimburse based on that amount. And then we said pchas nevela l'nizek, if it goes down in value, then we said we figure that toward the nizek. However, Shmuel had said, we don't make that calculation when it comes to a ganav or a gazlan. So say in a similar example, a ganav had stolen an animal worth 100 and then it died. We wouldn't say that, look, the nevela now is worth 20, so you take the nevela and then I'll pay you back another 80. No, we say you have to pay a full 100 and you yourself can do whatever you want with the nevela. So Shmuel is saying you don't make that kind of evaluation, by nizokin, implying that you don't say harei shalach l'fanecha. So Bishlema the Rava the Amaki Kamar of Shimon Elazar Hasam Bat Khosha the Hodder. So according to Rava, who we just said holds that Shimon Elazar is talking about a changeable hakhosha, that he says right now the animal is weaker, but eventually it's going to become stronger again. So then like Tasha. So then there'd be no contradiction within what Shmuel is saying. He would be saying the halacha is like Shimon Elazar, that the change is not considered a change such that the ganav would acquire the thing. That would apply by kosher to hoder. He would be saying when we're talking about a weakening that is going to go back. In other words, where right now the animal is weaker, but eventually it's going to strengthen again. So then he'd have the right to say harei shalach l'fanecha. And then when he says v'kachika amashmul hasam and shaman le the ganav le the gazlan el nezakin, when he says that you don't make such evaluations as far as a ganav or a gazlan, that would be about kosher to loy hoder. That would be talking about an unchangeable hakosha. So say the animal, for example, lost an arm or a leg or something, then he couldn't say, harei shalach l'fanecha. Then we would say, no, you stole from me a complete animal. You have to return me a complete animal. So therefore, and I don't want an animal with a mum, and then you're going to reimburse me for the difference. No, you keep that animal with the mum, and you give me back, and then you give me back the money for a perfectly healthy animal. So fine. So according to Rava, it's easy to understand, and there's no contradiction within what Shmuel's saying. Ella la Abaya, but according to Abaya, Drama Kikamer, Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Bach Kosher, Deloy Hodrakamer, but according to Abaya, who said that Rav Shimon ben Elazar is talking about even an unchangeable hakosha, because he said, you learn from this that Rav Shimon ben Elazar holds that a shinui is never koine, and a shinui meaning even a shinui achoiz alabriyas, right? So according to Abaya's way of understanding Rav Shimon ben Elazar, how are you going to reconcile Shmuel's two statements, where he's saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Elazar, but he also says that you don't do this evaluation for Ganav or Gazlan? And the answer is Abaya masni hachi. Abaya would actually learn Shmuel's statements as follows. Omru of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Abaya would learn that Rabbi Yehuda is saying in the name of Shmuel, Omru halacha k'rav Shimon Elazar. They said the Chachmei HaYeshiva had said that there are people who say the halacha is like Rav Shimon Elazar, implying the Leilai Svirulei, implying that Shmuel himself does not agree with that. So therefore, Abaya would say Shmuel does in fact disagree with Rav Shimon Elazar. He holds the halacha is like the Chachamim, and therefore we can say that you never say Hareish halacha fanecha. You would always say that he has to reimburse him to get back to the original value, and therefore, and that's what Shmuel means, that in Shomim Lanizah. Which means, in other words, in our case, for example, so the animal was worth 100 when he stole it. Now it's worth only 80. He wouldn't have the right to say, Harei Shalach Panecha. We would say, you have to make sure that he has 100. And that would mean, in other words, either that you keep the animal with the mum and give him $100, or if the Nizik wants his animal back, obviously, then you could say you give him the animal and you give him an extra $20 in. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Abchir Ba'aba Amar Ab Yechanan, Dvar Torah, Min HaTorah, the rule would be Gzela HaNishtanis, when you have a Gzela, even though it was changed, nevertheless, it would still have to be returned as is. Because the pasuk says he should return the stolen object that he stole, and the word asher gozal means mikol mokum, meaning regardless, even though it's been changed, min haTorah he would have to return. So Rav Chiya Ba'aba says, what about our Mishnah, where we said hagozal etzim ba'ason kalim, that he keeps the kalim and he pays back only the value? That would be Mishnah takonas hashavim. That would only be midrabanan because of takonas hashavim, because we want to make it easier for people to do tshuva. If we tell them you always have to return the thing itself, then he might not bother, as the Gemara is going to give an example soon, and he might say, I can't be bothered, and therefore he's not going to end up doing tshuva at all.
We'll talk about the beam later on.
Yes, we'll mention that point. So the question is, did Rav Yochanan really say that a shinui is not koinim in HaTorah? Well, Amar Rav Yochanan halacha k'stam mishnah. Rav Yochanan says the halacha is always like a stam mishnah. Utnan, yet we learn in connection with Reishis HaGev that we talked about earlier, that we talked about in yesterday's Gemara, where they have the mitzvah to give the first of the wool shearings to the koyin. But again, we said it has to be in its original state. It can't be, if there was a shinui to it, then you're not chayiv to give that for Reishis HaGeiz anymore. And the Mishnah says over there, Loi hispik litna lai abshet savoy, if he didn't have a chance to give it to the Kohen before he died it, potter, then he's potter, and we said there's two possibilities. Either potter would be, if he doesn't have, besides that, enough wool to be chayiv and Reishis HaGeiz altogether, then he's potter completely. And if he has other wool, then it means only he has to give from that other wool, not from this wool that he already died. So we see, in other words, that Reishis HaGeiz, we're talking about a din daraisa, we're talking about the mitzvah of Reishis HaGeiz as daraisa. So we see that even daraisa, a shinui, even daraisa, an irrevocable shinui is koine for him. So how can Rabbi Yochanan say differently? So the answer is, Amalahu ahumid rabbanim, but Rabbi Yaakov Shmei, one of the chachamim named Rabbi Yaakov, answered them, L'didimi farshle minei Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan personally explained to me, what does he mean when he says, Shinui is not koinim, but daraisa, k'gunshu gozal etzim mishrupan v'asan kalim. We're talking about the case, as we learned from the Gemara yesterday, where he stole boards that were already smoothed and planed, and turn them into kalim. He turned them into chairs or boxes or what have you. To have a shinui achozel b'riyasei, where there you're talking about a revocable shinui, because it's possible to take the box apart and you have the same boards that you started out with to begin with. So that would be a shinui achozel b'riyasei. That kind of thing, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, is not koinim b'daraisa. A shinui she'ini achozel b'riyasei, Rabbi Yochanan would agree on the basis of the Mishnah in Chulin, is is Koina Doraisa. So that would explain why over there he dyed the wool and it's considered now to be his, and he doesn't have to give it to the Kohen because that's a Shinu Sheini Chozer Libriyase. At this point, the Gemara is not making the distinction between different kinds of dyes, like we said before, which ones can or can't be removed with detergent. So that's what we're saying. So Rav Yechon is saying, on a Doraisa level, we would say that only if it's a Shini Achozer Libriyase is Koina. But Rabbanon was saying, even if it's a Shini Sheini Achozer Libriyase, nevertheless, we would still allow the Gazlan to keep the object because of Tachanas Hashav.
In this case, we just look at what's making it smooth.
So here we're talking about he started with smooth boards and made them into Kalim. So they're already smooth, and when he takes apart the keli, they go back to being boards like they were before. So that's a shinui achozer libriyase. If he cut them, that would be different. We're talking about if he didn't cut them. Tosus points out, by the way, there are other mishnayos later on in our perek that also imply that a shinui achozer libriyase is koina. So why didn't the Gemara ask from those? Because you could say maybe to have a stamba achakach machlokas, you have a machlokas on that point from the Meir and Rabbi Yehuda later on in the parak. So therefore that wouldn't necessarily prove from those mishnayos that the halacha is like halacha kastam mishnah. But when we have a masechta, a mishnah in cholin, nowhere near our mishnayos, and we see that, then the Gemara asked from them. Next, Tana Rabbanan, let's talk more about the Sakonas HaShavim business. We learn in a Braisa, HaGazlonin, Umalvi Beribis, people who steal, and people who rob, and people who lend at Ribis, Shech Ziru, and now they want to return what they, and now they want to return what they took illegally, Shech Ziru, if they return it, Ein Makablan Mehen, we should not accept back from them what they're returning. And anybody who does take it back from them, now usually usually means the chachamim are not pleased with such a person. Here actually it actually has an unusual explanation. It means the person himself does not have a ruach chachma v'chassidus. If he had a spirit of chachma and chassidus, he wouldn't accept back what they're offering, because then it makes it harder for them to do tshuva, because then they're going to lose all their money. So the better thing is not to accept it from them. Now, Amar Rav Yechanan b'mei Rebbe nishnis mishnah zu. Rav Yechanan says this mishnah, meaning braisa, was taught in the times of Rebbe. What happened? Tanya, Maisa ba'adam echach vikash lasas tshuva. There was a man who had stolen and wanted to do tshuva. Amr la ishta, his wife says to him, so he'd stolen, he wanted to return it. Amr la ishta, his wife says to him, Reka, you empty person. Don't you realize what you're doing? If you're going to end up tshuva and returning everything you stole, even the belt you're wearing is not going to be yours. Maharsha points out also a belt in those times was often used to keep money. So when she uses the word reka, she actually means like a double entendre in it. She means you're not going to be able to keep the money that's in the belt, and even the belt itself, the belt is going to be empty, and even the belt itself you're going to have to return. And the result was he held back and he didn't end up doing tshuva. But Oysa Shah Amru, at that point, the Chacham said, we should not accept. They're offering the money, but we should not accept it back from them so that they don't hold back from doing tshuva. And if a person does accept it from them, then again, as Rashi had said, he doesn't have a spirit of chochma or chassidus, because he shouldn't accept it from them. He should tell them, thank you very much, I appreciate what you're doing, I see you want to do tshuva, however, you keep it because I want to make it easier for you to do tshuva. That's the thing. You have a mitzvah of a heshiv esakzela, but what we're saying is, the braisa is saying over here that when the ganav comes to return the thing, we should tell him, thank you very much. However, I don't want you to return it. I'm moichel it to you in order that it should be easier for you to finish doing tshuva and never steal again. So if you said, I'm moichel it to you, in other words, yeah. Yeah, so we're talking about, in other words, that previously he had paid ribis and now he wants to return it, so you tell him, I'm moichel it to you and you keep it. So you have a Rishonim that talk about the Rambam hold. The Rambam seems to say that, in other words, the Chachamim are requiring the Nigzal to say, I'm Moichel to you. The Smag and other Rishonim learn that you don't necessarily need to say, I'm Moichel. It's in effect, the Chachamim are saying, you don't have a right to take it back. If you want to go to Beis Din and you're going to force the guy to get it, then look, Beis Din can't prevent you from doing it, but Ein Ruach Chachamim Neuchahemem. Tosfos discusses over here. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam. The fact is, we find in many cases in the Gemara where somebody stole something and we do make him return it. How does that fit with what we're saying over here? So Tosfos learns, so Rabbeinu Tam learns that this was a one-time takana. In Rebbe's times, when we say, Rabbeinu Tam learns, when we say, Bimei Rebbe, Nishnas Mishnasu, and we have other examples in Shas where we have that expression, it means the Braisa, the Gemara is not just telling us a historical fact when this takana was made, it's also telling us when does the takana apply. Only in that time because of the situation that happened at that time. At other times, that wouldn't necessarily apply. So therefore, the Gemara is only, so therefore, the Gemara is going to ask, so therefore, I mean, the time continues, the Gemara is going to ask from a Braisa that Rav Chiya teaches because Rav Chiya was a Talmud of Rebbe. But the Gemara is not going to ask from other Mishnayos and Braisas where we see that a person does return something he stole, because we could say those are in other times, those are before or after Rebbe's times. That's the point that I've been attacking. Then on the other hand, the Re in Tosfos gives a different answer. He says that no, what we're talking about over here is a person who most of his income has been coming from Gzela, or most of his income has been coming from Ribis. So now, if you make him return everything, then he's going to have nothing left, and therefore he's going to hold back, and he's not going to want to, and he's not going to want to do tshuva. When you have a person who occasionally stole, or occasionally a one-time thing, stole, or one-time lent at Ribis, then yes, we are going to require him to return it. So that's another way of understanding what the Gemara is saying over here. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mesri, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Hiniach lehem avia moistro ribis. Suppose that there are children who yarshin from their father, and their father left them money that he had earned from ribis. Apopi shein yodin shein ribis. Even if they know that that money is ribis, ein chayovin lahachzer, still they're not required to return it, implying inhu hu deloy, they're not required to return it because they're not the ones who took the ribis. Implying that their father would have to return it. So then in that case, again, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the question is, this Braisa was taught by Rav Chiya, and Rav Chiya is a Talmud of Rebbe, and he should be following the takana that Rebbe made for his times. And according to the Re, the point is, we're talking about over here that he did it regularly, he did it throughout his life, he was lending at Ribis, and the implication is he has to return it. Tosfos, by the way, points out that we can't necessarily say that it means that when they're doing tshuva, then they should be we should tell them that we don't want to accept it from them. We should tell them I don't want to accept it. I want to make it easier for you. So the Rosh and a couple of other Rishonim explain that when they want to do tshuva and return it themselves, then we're telling them when they voluntarily come to return it, then we tell them no, don't. But if they don't return it themselves, then Beis Din will force them to return it. However, Tosfos disagrees with that and says the fact is then they can always game the system, they can play a trick, they can always pretend they're doing tshuva, and then we're going to say, well, then we won't accept it from you, and then they get to keep it. So therefore, Tosfos prefers there are other two explanations, either that this was a one-time takana in Rebbe's times, or that we're talking about somebody who habitually steals or whatever. Anyway, the point is, the Braisa seems to be implying that the father himself, who took the ribis, would have to return it. Not like we're saying. The answer is, v'dinhu dafilu davim nami ein chai v'hachzer. In fact, strictly speaking, the father wouldn't have to return either because of the stakon. V'hodich atoni v'didhu. The reason why the Braisa focuses on the children, because of what it's going to say in the Sefer, which is something that applies specifically to the children, where it says, on the other hand, if the father didn't just leave them money, where money is fungible and you can't tell where any particular coin came from, if he left them behind a cow or a talus which he had taken as ribis, or any definitive thing, anything which we can point to and say this was something that was taken as ribis, then they are, in fact, chayav to return it because of the covet of their father. So that part is only relevant as far as the children, which is why the first part of the Braisa also talked about the children, but not necessarily to say that the father himself would have to return it because of Takanas HaShavim that we're saying over here. Tosfos points out that it's not even Lotzis Yedei Shemayim, it's not even that you can say they're returning it only to be Yotze, what Hashem requires, but since it says the expression Chayovin implies they're actually Chayim to return it, not just Lotzis Yedei Shemayim. Well, that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying, that they have to return chayyavim lahachsim ipnei kvod aviyim. Not just that we say lotzis yidei shemayim. They're actually chayyav as a technical thing of halacha to return it because of the covenant of their father. Because of the covenant of their father, so that people don't continue to say, "Look at that part. It was stolen by their father. It was taken as rivis by their father." Well, the Gemara asks, in that case, ipnei kvod aviyim chayyavim lahachsir. Why should they be required to return it because of the covenant of their father? Ikri tan v'nosi v'amcha loyser v'oseh ma'aseh amcha. Shouldn't we apply what the pasuk says over here, where it says in this week's parasha, you're not allowed to curse a nosi among your people, and since it says among your people, it only means v'oseh ma'aseh amcha, only when he's acting as a yid should. And from that we learn, similarly, when it comes to Kibbutz Av, that the dinim of Kibbutz Av don't fully apply if the guy is not Oseh Ma'aseh Amcha. So why should they be required, Mipnei Kvod Avihem, to return the object? Why? Their father was a Rosha. They shouldn't be chayiv in that kind of covenant. The answer is, Kibbutz Omer Pinchas, which also Tshuva, just like what Pinchas says in a different context, in the Gemara and Chagiga, that you're talking about, where it talks about over there, about people, about tax collectors who went into a house and were concerned they may have touched things and made them tamei, but if afterwards they do Tshuva, and they want to return what they took illegally, then we can trust them to say what they touched and what they didn't touch. So similarly, Hochanami, which also Tshuva, here also you're talking about where the father did Tshuva before he died. Well, the question is, he also truva my boy gabe. Well, then what's the thing still doing by him? He should have returned the cow or the talus himself. He should have returned it. And the answer is, we're talking about he didn't have a chance to return it before he died. So he did truva. He's already oisa maisa amcha. But because he didn't have a chance to return it yet, therefore the children have to do it for him. It is true, the Gemara is assuming, if he remained a Rosha and he never did truva, the children taka would not necessarily be required to return that part or talus. Because the only reason for them to have to return is Mipnei Kvod Avihem, and the fact is their father doesn't deserve that kind of covet because he died as a Rosha. Are they saying Kaddish for him? That's another question. I mean, nowadays, we generally don't apply these dinim because we have the whole concept of Tinik Shanishva. Most people who didn't live a total lifestyle is because they're Tinotus Shanishvu. But, yeah. Okay. There are different Rishonim who talk about the details in this. Again, you know, you have different opinions in Tosfos when exactly this concept of not returning a Gzela applies. When do we say that we want to do Takanas Hashavim versus, on the other hand, you do have a mitzvah of a Heshav as a Gzela? So in fact, we had two answers in Tosfos that we're talking about, that where he does it all the time, whereas most of his fortune comes from that. And where Tosfos had also mentioned another answer that it's only in Rebbe's times. The Nimuka Yosef brings actually that it's only when you have that he wants voluntarily to do tshuva, and most of his money comes from these kinds of things, then we tell him don't return it because we want him to be able to do tshuva. But if it was only one or the other, then we would make him return it. And then, in fact, the Mishnah Lamelech explains that it means that if the first time he offers it, we don't take it from him, but if again he says, please take it from me, then already we do, because then obviously it's not going to prevent him from doing tshuva, the fact that we're taking it from him because he himself is voluntarily offering to give it again. So you have different opinions about that. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Toshma, let's bring another proof from a Braisa. A Braisa says, Hagazlonim umalvi beribis, people who stole or people who lent at ribis, afapisha gogu, even though they collected, machzirin, they still have to return. Now, the word gogu usually means like tax collectors or something. So the Gemara asks, what's this expression? My should gogu ika. E gozel gozel v gozel like gozel. What do you mean? They either stole or they didn't. What do you mean? Gogu would imply if they took it. If they didn't take it, they're not a gazlan. So never mind actually about tax collectors. The word gogu implies they actually took the object. If they didn't take it. No. You say if they demanded it, the fact is they didn't take it yet. So what do we mean? Gogu or loy gogu as it relates to a gazlan. Ella. Ema hagazlonin. Rather, what the Braisa means is when we say gazlonin, umay nihu malvi ribis. What kind of gazlon do we mean? Somebody who lends at ribis, which is also a form of gezel, afapisha gogu, even though he already collected the ribis from the loiva machzirin, nevertheless he has to return it. So we see that we do take back the payment from a malvi ribis. Not like we said before that Rebbe's takana was that you shouldn't. The answer is amri. The answer is fine. It says machzirin. They have to return it. The ain makablin lehem. However, we should not accept it from them when they offer it. Ela loma machzirin. Why are they offering it? Lotzis yidei shemayim. They still have to make the offer. Lotzis yidei shemayim to be exempted from punishment by Hashem. Once we see that they're sincerely wanting to return it, and then we tell them we don't, then we say we're not going to accept it. Then fine, Hashem will have accepted their tshuva, but on the other hand, we want to make it easier for them to do that and to do tshuva. Okay. Tosfos actually compares this with a Gemara in Bava Metzia that talks about when you have the dinim, when we say what kind of ribis can be collected by dayanim, which kind not. You have a concept of which ribis daraisa, then dayanim can collect it, and here we're saying that we don't collect it from them. So again, you have the various answers about the different possibilities in terms of what the circumstances are. Again, was this a takana for only one time in history, or is this only somebody who habitually lends it ribis, and they were talking about a one time thing, etc. Okay. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring another proof. How royim v'agaboyin v'hamloifsin, shepherds, and at this point the Gemara is assuming that the problem with shepherds is, as we learned previously in the seventh parak, they often allow their animals to graze in other people's properties. V'agaboyin, and tax collectors, where often the Gemara assumes that they collect more than they're supposed to. The way that taxes worked in those days wasn't like nowadays where every person files their own income taxes and whatever. The way it worked is the government would decide, the king would decide that this area needs, I want $1 million from this area in taxes. And then he would leave it up to the tax collectors to go and collect it. And they would often collect a lot more than $1 million, and they'd keep the rest for themselves. So therefore, the Gemara usually assumes that tax collectors are gazlonim. And it's actually mosin are tax collectors. Gaboyim says they're collecting other kinds of taxes, head taxes and property taxes, and whatever mosin would be, then the ones who are collecting like tolls and whatever. All of them, chuvos and kosher, all of them, it's very difficult for them to do chuvah because they don't know exactly who they took from. Umachzirin, umachirin, they have to return the money. Anybody that they recognize in particular, we took money illegally from him, they have to return it. So we're saying they have to return it. So the answer again, Ami Machzirin Ven Makablin Mehen. Again, we could say it means they have to offer it back to those people. We don't actually accept it from them because of the Takonis Hashavim, but Lotz Yidei Shemayim, then in that case, then it's only Lotz Yidei Shemayim. Well, the Gemara says can't be. Hochi, Amai Chuvos and Kosher. Then why is it so hard for them to do Chuvah? In that case, they're not actually returning the money to anybody because the people they don't know who they stole from, they're not offering it to anyway. The ones that they did were saying they're not going to accept it from them. So it's very easy for them to do Chuvah. What's the problem? But oi, Ema Sefer. And not only that, the Braitzer continues. What about the people where they don't know for sure whether they took from them? What do they do with the rest of that money? Yasa behen Sochei Tzibur. They should use that money for public needs. They should use that money, for example, to go towards digging water pits and things like that, where everybody will benefit from that, and eventually we can expect that the Nigzolim will benefit from it as well. So it's not a direct trova, but it's more of an indirect kind of thing. The point is, we do take the money away from them, and we make them use it on something. So Ela Loikasha. Can kodim takana, can ma'acha takana. We can say very simple. One braisa is talking about the braisa about the shepherds and the tax collectors and whatnot is before the takana. It's true. Then you would take the money from them, from anybody who they know for sure they took from, they would have to return it to, and anybody not, they would have to use it on sochet tzibur. So it becomes very difficult for them to do tshuva because it means they're going to be giving away a large part of their money, and even then it means the ones that they don't know, they're not able to pay back directly. Where's the other one? Would be after the takana, then it becomes much easier. Because then we're not taking the money from them. However, the Gemara says, "V'hashda the Amr of Nachman, v'she'en zeila kayemes." However, now you should know that Rav Nachman said that this that we say we don't take it from them is only when the original zeila itself does not exist. In other words, like in the example we had before, the children with the ribis, we said before there was a difference between whether it was money or whether it was the actual cow or something like that. So now Rav Nachman is saying you have a similar distinction over here. Only when the zeila is not kayemes, only then. Do we say that we make the takana not to take the money from them, but when the gzela itself exists as is, then they have to return it? So then we can say after the tema aidi va'aidi la'acha takana, both braises can be talking about after the takana of Rebbe. Because you can distinguish between whether the gzela still exists or not. Now, the question is, Tosfos asks, if we're saying, so by the royin, by the shepherds, what kind of zela kayemis? The whole point is, they're grazing in other people's fields, that's not a zela kayemis, they already ate the grass over there or whatever. So Tosfos says, first of all, the royin could mean over here, not that the problem is that they allow their animals to graze in other people's fields, but rather that the royin themselves, sometimes they're pasturing other people's animals, and they steal the animals themselves. They take the milk, they take the wool, and keep it for themselves, so then we can talk about that the milk or the wool still exists. Also, Tosfos says, in fact, Tosfos says it's not because they're grazing in other people's fields, because if the animals don't belong to them, why would they do that? Why would they do such a thing where it's not even benefiting them? the Rashba explains also that it could be talking about you could even be talking about if it's his own animals. What we're talking about, let's say he stole a bundle of hay to feed the animal, and the bundle of hay still exists. So he wants to now do tshuva before the animal actually ate it. And then he brings from the Raven that it can also be oy hay and oy chalifeh. You can have, for example, let's say a bundle of hay, even if the animal already ate it. Fine, it's easy enough to pay with another bundle of hay. One bundle is very much like another, so that would still be considered zela kayemes. So the Gemara asks, "Well, abnik zela kayemesi? What about the whole thing we said? The whole story that triggered this whole takana was the story where the guy wants to do tshuva and his wife says even your belt won't belong to you. The belt is zela kayemes because apparently the assumption is that he'd stolen the actual belt itself. And yet the Chachamim included that in the Tachanas HaShavim and said he doesn't have to give back the belt because otherwise he won't do tshuva. So how can we say there's a distinction between kayemes or ena kayemes?" So the Gemara answer is no. My avnet dmei avnet. The answer is she doesn't mean he'd have to return the actual belt. She means he'd have to return the value of the belt, and that would be very hard for him. So therefore he didn't end up doing tshuva, and therefore the Chum said you shouldn't have to do that. Had it been the actual belt itself that he stole, yes, we would make him return that. Says the Gemara is saying now. But the Gemara continues. So you're telling me whenever the gzela still exists, the chachamim are not making the takana, and you make them return the actual object. What about the case where a person steals a beam, like you said before, and he builds it into a building? Yet we learn in the Mishnah in Gittin, that if a person stole a beam and built it into a building, the Chachamim made a takana sheyitol dom of netakana sashavim, that he should get the money for it rather than taking the actual beam itself because of takana sashavim. So you see that even when the gzela is kayemes, he still doesn't have to return it. The answer is shiny hosim to kibin the ikup say to the bira. The difference is he'd have to tear down the whole building. So therefore that's considered ain't a payamas shavur abonin to the lesser. So the chacham treat that beam as though it no longer exists. But it's true in other cases where that wouldn't be an issue, then yes, they would make him return the actual object itself. We find, by the way, it says by the people of Nineveh when it says that the king announces after Yonah comes to them that everybody should do tshuvim in a chomas hasheva kapeim. The Gemara mentions in Tainis that means even something like that they went to the extreme that even they had built a mordish into their building, they would tear down the building to return the actual mordish. They wanted to go the extra mile so that the Eivishah has no nishtok and faribol, so the Eivishah has no objection to them and then won't punish them. But ordinarily the Chacham was saying that we make a takana and we don't require him to return that.